I am Farron Peterson. We are here at Belterra Park interviewing Perry Utz. And Perry, is it correct that the Winter Circle is now named after you?
It is. They did that, I think it was in the spring this year. Yeah, I thought that was a pretty good honor.
Yeah, was that for your 70th birthday celebration?
Probably, yeah.
Welcome back to the Boundless Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Farron Peterson, a professional jockey and veterinarian in Lexington, Kentucky. We are here to learn from stories of resilience, risk-taking, and perseverance. So Perry is so humble that we had to look up his stats. He is currently 70 years old. He's ridden in 53,419 races and won 7,487 of them. And he's not finished yet. So Perry, what initially drew you to horse racing?
Well, I was always real small even when I was a kid. I mean, I was like the smallest kid in school. Feet wouldn't even touch the ground when I was sitting in my chair. Mm-hmm. And I think I was in the fifth grade, and I always liked horses as long as I can remember. Anytime I got close to one, I had to get on them.
Were you around them? Did your family ride?
Mm-hmm. I had family that had horses and stuff, and I would just, anytime I could get close to one, I would ride them. And then I was in the fifth grade, and my cousin had started riding, which is Early Fires. He's won a lot of races. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's done really well. But we were raised in the same little town with all of his brothers, and they all went on the racetrack.
What town was that?
It was Rivervale, Arkansas.
Okay.
And so, like I said, I was in the fifth grade, and he started riding, and I got to thinking that that would be a really good job to have, to being real small and liking horses. Mm-hmm. And as time went on, I didn't think too much more about it until I graduated from high school. And my cousins called me and they said, "You want to come up to Chicago and we'll make a jockey out of you?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Pack my bags, I'm on my way." And so 7 days later, I was on the racetrack. I've been there ever since.
That was brave. Was it intimidating to move out of the house at that age? And
not at all. Like I said, I was going to set the world on fire.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so.
How many rides did it take to win your first race?
Three, as a matter of fact.
Okay, yeah. So you were definitely ready to set the world on fire.
Well, I don't know if I was ready or not, but, you know, I went with it. Yeah, I rode two the first day. I was named on the card first day, and the stewards wouldn't let me ride but two. Mm-hmm. So they said, pick out the best two that you think you're on, and you can ride those, and if you don't mess up, we'll give you a license. So I rode two, run third and fourth my first day. And my next day, I think I rode seven and won two. Mm-hmm. My second day of riding.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was riding at that first meet and was leading rider. And, you know, I was thinking this was easy. I said, "I'm going to be another Willie Shoemaker. This is so easy."
That's right.
But, yeah, I was just getting lucky. I couldn't even spell horse.
Well, I don't know how old Willie Shoemaker was when he retired, yeah, but you at least surpassed him.
Yeah. I passed a lot of them. I mean, a lot.
Now tell me about the year 1973.
Yeah, that was the year I started riding. It was in 73. And me and Pat Day, we both started in 73. And in 74, Chris McCarron, Russell Bay started riding. So we all had the bug same period. So it was a good year for bug riders.
Yeah, I'd say so. So for listeners who don't know what the bug is, when an apprentice rider starts out their first year, they get a weight allowance to incentivize a trainer to ride someone who's less experienced against more experienced jockeys. Now, Perry, you seem multifaceted. Did you consider any other career path? And what would that have looked like for you? Do you think that's something you might circle back to?
I've never really thought about it ever since, like I said, I got that call from my cousins when I graduated high school. I've never thought about anything else since.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Yeah. You never had any lull in your career. Winning has always felt the same. Being around horses has always been as rewarding.
Yeah, I still get that same thrill even after 50-something years. Every time I cross the finish line, I get that same thrill.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What were your goals when you started your career? Have you achieved them, or have they changed over time?
I think I've passed all the goals that I ever set, ever.
Awesome.
Because I thought once I start riding, maybe if you could get 20 years out of this job, it would be a good career. Mm-hmm. And then 20 years came and went. So I said, well, if you get 30 years, that'd be great. And that came and went. I said, well, I'm going to try for 40. That came and went. And now, like I said, I'm past 50 and still going.
So, just keep raising the bar.
So, and like I said, it's never got old. I mean, all these years, it's never got old.
I love that about this career. People often ask me how long a jockey can ride. And, you know, in other careers like baseball, football, you have to make it big by a certain time frame, and then your body can only take so much.
Yeah.
I tell people there are plenty of jockeys in their 50s who are riding at the highest level, and then I ride with one jockey who's 70 and he still won one more races this year than I did. It's incredible. If you could go back and talk to younger Perry, would you have any advice?
Yeah, save more money. That would have been
first
thing I would have done. Because back when you're young, you make a lot of money, but you spend a lot because you think, well, if I spend it all today, I'll just make a bunch more tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of your philosophy when you're young because you don't think it'll ever end.
Right.
But it does, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Get hurt a few times, you go through all your money quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with no money coming in, it goes out really quick. So that's what I would have done. I would have saved a lot more. Like, if I would have thought when I first started, just take $10 every time you ride a horse and just stick it in a drawer, just do anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 10 times 50,000, that'd be a lot of money.
That'd be
like $500,000 right there. And it wouldn't have took nothing, $10 a horse. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't have missed it. And I wish I'd have done that. So,
yeah.
But other than that, I got no regrets, none.
That is great advice. I see that with Bug Boys and
right. Getting
excited, and it feels like winning so easy when you're on the right horses, you have the right agent.
You got it.
Backing behind you. And there's not a lot of people giving advice, but I've heard of some. John McGee talks about his agent. He lived with him, and he was very successful early on, still doing great. But he said, he told me, you better start investing your money right away.
Yeah, because it doesn't last.
What would you say was the longest time you had to take off from the track for, say, an injury?
I was off for a year one time with a broken arm.
Mm-hmm.
But it was having trouble healing. I had like 4 operations on it. For some reason, it just didn't want to heal, and that was the longest I was ever off.
What did you do at that time?
A lot of rehabbing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I said, the first year I had 3 surgeries. And finally, after the last one, I was able to go back to riding. And I rode for 7 months and went in for a routine checkup on my arm. And the doctor asked me, he said, does your arm hurt when you're riding? I said, yeah, a little bit. When I hit a horse, it kind of stings a little. Mm-hmm. He said, well, it's no wonder your arm still broke. He said, you broke both the plates that's holding it together. He said, I don't know how you do it. I said, well, I hit them left-handed a lot because I broke my right arm.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that was kind of a shock when he told me that. And he said, well, I'm going to have to go back in and operate again, put new plates in, so you're going to be off for a while. So I was off for another 7 months, and then finally it took that time. So, yeah, but that was probably the longest time I was off.
How did you keep your mental state and your hope throughout that time? And that's a long setback.
Yeah, rode my motorcycle a lot. So
that's good.
That always helps.
Bones, right?
Yeah.
Sure, your surgeon was thrilled.
Yeah, I didn't tell him.
There you go. That's right. He doesn't need to know.
Yeah.
Is there anyone who mentored you or inspired you to become the sportsman and rider that you are today?
Yeah. Early Fires, he taught me a lot about how to be a jockey, how to get one out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And first time I ever broke out of the gate was with him. And
awesome.
Yeah, so that. But his whole family was like that. Like Jinx Fires, mm-hmm. Bucky Fires, Jackie, Pedro, Manny, Wayne, Teddy. I mean, they were all good. I mean, they all helped you. You know, I lived with them when I first left Arkansas. I stayed with them in Chicago. So that was pretty good.
So it was a whole family of racing.
Yeah. There was 9 of those boys, and 8 of them was on the racetrack. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And wow. So.
Their parents did something right. They all had character and work ethic. Now, from riding with you, I notice you do not tend to claim foul, even when someone has interfered with you.
Right.
Where does that come from?
I just never did like going up in front of the stewards or just never did like claiming foul. And I would never claim foul if I couldn't be placed the winner. Maybe if I'd run second, I might claim foul. But if I run third or fourth, or just they'd have to make me do it. I just wouldn't claim foul. Because I didn't want to make somebody else the winner just because, you know, I got bothered a little. Mm-hmm. But it just never did bother me that much when somebody, you know, cut me off or whatever. I'd get even down the road, so. Uh-huh. Yeah, so I just never did like claiming foul. I don't know why. It's just been a lifetime thing.
I do think it's important as an athlete to be able to keep your cool. And especially in the sport we do, when we go back-to-back races, you lose your cool and then sets you up for the next race to just have negative energy with your horse.
Yeah.
I think that's really great. People in the jocks room tell me you are the first person out of the room to the paddock every time.
Pretty much, yeah. Always been that way. Mm-hmm. Just, I don't know why. Just
preparation.
Right. Just never wanted to be late, you know, like didn't want somebody yelling at you or something. You know?
And then I've seen you out on horses in the early morning in the dead of winter at Turfway Park. At this stage of your career, you're established. Many riders in your similar position no longer do the morning work. Why is it that you still come out in the morning?
Well, it keeps you fit for one thing. It keeps you, mentally sharp, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I just never did mind work. That was not a problem with me. I mean, my whole life I've done that. You know, I've worked every day, 6 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Take one day off a week to rest, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
No. So, but I enjoy it. It doesn't bother me to get on horses. I mean, I actually like it, yeah. I mean, I like to get on horses every day, and you get to know them really good. So then when you ride in the afternoons, you kind of got an edge up on, you know, getting on a horse you'd never seen before. So, right. Yeah.
You have that established relationship.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I just mostly get on horses for my wife, you know, because the reason I started that is because she always had trouble getting exercise boys to get on her horses.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd hate to see her sit around for 2 or 3 hours after she'd done been there for 4 hours, you know.
Frustrating.
Waiting to get for a guy. So I said, well, I can get on a couple for you every day, you know, get you started. And a couple turned into 3 and 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
Now 6 or 7, however how many she has to go that day. That's usually how many I get on. So, but I don't mind it. Like I said, it doesn't bother me at all.
I enjoy the morning work, too,
yeah.
Even when I'm really tired. I think if I still want to get out of bed, I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah, like I said, I just got on 8 Saturday. Didn't bother me at all.
Uh-huh.
But mostly I just get on her horses and Larry Smith, and that's about it. I don't go out and hustle anymore. Like, I used to hit every barn every day, you know, see if anybody needed me, mm-hmm. get on as many as they wanted. Not anymore. I just mostly get on Tony's horses and Larry's, and that's it.
Yeah.
And one guy stopped me at the gap one day and asked me, do I get on outside horses? And I said, no. He said, well, would you ride one if I put you on one? And I said, yeah, but I just ain't getting on him in the morning. And he said, that's fine. But, yeah, I just, like I said, I just don't hustle anymore like I used to. But I still work as hard. I just don't, you know, hit every barn.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that, I like helping Tony out, and then Larry, whatever he wants, it's it's a no-brainer.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like I said, it's a no-brainer with him. And of all the people I've worked for, he's one that doesn't work you to death. I mean, I go down once a week, work maybe two horses for him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it, and ride all of his horses every day. And it's been that way for years, like 10 years now, I think.
Can you talk about that loyal and long-term relationship? You don't see that often with...
I've never seen it anywhere, you know, never, especially for this long. But Larry is such a laid-back guy. I mean, he is just so cool that nothing bothers him. I mean, 8 to 5 horse runs bad. He said, well, we'll go back and check him out, see if there's anything there. And if not, we'll get rid of him. We'll get another one. And most trainers, if you ride 8 to 5 and they get beat, you know.
They're going to be angry.
If somebody else is going to be riding next time when he's 8 to 5 again. But Larry's not like that. And we've had a lot of luck together. I mean, won a lot of races. And I think it's because he trusts me and I trust his, you know, getting them ready and putting. But he picks out the best spots for his horses. If you ever looked at them. I mean, people wonder why he wins so many races like he does. Well, you look at the spots he picks out. I mean, every horse almost 8 to 5 because he likes to win.
Yeah, he's strategic.
He might be the only guy I know that likes to win more than me. But yeah, he likes to win. And that's pretty much all he does it for is because he likes to win. I mean, he don't have to do this to make a living. He worked, I think, for the Ford plant for 40 years, and he draws a super nice pension and draws Social Security, and kids are all grown, so he don't have no bills at all. And he just does this because he likes to win. I mean, his whole career, he had 4 or 5 horses he would mess around with before he went to his real job. And then once he retired, he started getting a few more and started winning, got to liking it and got to winning more. Well, as long as you're winning, everybody wants you then. You know, so everybody wanted him to train him, and he started training for other people, but yeah.
So you and Larry share that in common. Neither of you have to do this job.
Right.
Both of you do this job exceptionally well and love it.
Right, and we like to win. I mean, like I said, I've never found anything that gives you that kind of thrill. I mean, every time you win, I really did it. Yeah.
I tell people the same thing. There's no feeling like crossing the wire in front.
And like I said, I've been fortunate to do it almost 7,500 times. So.
And Periuge gets up right at the wire. Coinmaker and Periuge shows the way. Supreme Song and Periuge and Pepper Pike and Periuge just snag the lead.
It's still addicting after 50-something years.
Yeah.
So it don't get old.
No.
Pat Day said, if it ever starts getting old, he said, that'll be the time to quit. And he said, that's what happened to him. He said, one day he won a stake. He crossed the finish line. He didn't get that thrill. And he said, 3 days later, he was done. Yeah, he said he just didn't get that thrill when he crossed the line. So
right.
But like I said,
there's dignity to being able to choose that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you still have that thrill.
Yeah. Like I said, every time. I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's addicting. It's very
addicting.
Very. So we're going to try it for about one more year, maybe.
Okay. You know,
that's what I said last year.
Do you have a goal within that year, or you just want to ride?
Well, I want to get to the 7,500 wins, which I need like 13 more wins to do that. So that should be doable, you know.
Oh, it's doable.
And then I want to win or ride enough where I get past Russell Bays and the number of mounts ever ridden by a jockey. And I think I need like 170-something.
Okay, so Larry better get some more horses.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think it's very doable for next year.
So. Yeah. And you rode in the same jocks room with many of the top riders. You've mentioned to me Mike Smith, Pat Day.
Gary Stevens.
What set them apart to you early in their career? Did you believe they were destined for success? Were they, you know, a notch above the others?
Yeah, they had that something special, like Shoemaker and Cawthon. Horses just run for them for some reason. I don't know why. But there's been very few guys that's ever been like that, like Chris McCarron, Russell Bays. Like I said, Shoemaker and Cawthon. The horses just run for them for some reason. I don't know why. They don't do nothing that special. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the soft hands. I mm-hmm. think that has a lot to do with how horses run for you. Now, me, I always seemed like I had to make them run. Mm-hmm. I was never that fortunate where horses just carried me around there. I always had to kind of like a beat and knock on them mm-hmm. to make them run. Mm-hmm. But I rode a lot lesser quality, say, than Russell Bays, Pat Day, Chris McCarron. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, but they were pretty much all low-level claimers.
Right.
But yeah, but I still enjoyed it, even the low-level claimers. Mm-hmm. The win is the win. I didn't care if it could be the stake or the 4,000 claimer that day. It was still that same thrill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that shows your sportsmanship, too, because it's your respect for the horse, your respect for the owner, the trainer.
And I would ride just as hard for that guy for the 4,000 as I did for the guy that had the horse in the stake. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been that way since day one, and that's one of the reasons I've been known as a blue-collar jockey. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I would ride anything with a tail. I didn't care. Just throw me up and I would go.
Yeah. I've heard that about Russell Bays as well.
Yeah.
Not the end of his career.
Pin K, he was the same way. Mm-hmm. Ride anything with a tail, didn't care. Mm-hmm. You know, just
wanted to ride.
Yeah.
Wanted to win.
Yep, that's it. And you just, like I said, very few jockeys that I know have been like that. But, yeah, like I said, Russell Bays, Pin K, they were like that. Mm-hmm. They would ride anything. Cheap horse of the day or big stake of the day. Mm-hmm. Didn't care.
And can you talk about your loyal relationship with your agent, Jamie Fowler? It's often that I see riders have a lot of success, and then it always looks like the grass is going to be greener. They jump to the next agent. Why is it you guys have stayed together?
Well, we've worked together since 1987, so that would be 37 years, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, and we just always work good together, always. And a lot of agents that I've had in the past, they were kind of sleazy, like, mm-hmm. you know, like a, oil salesman? Or
used car salesman.
Used car salesman, mm-hmm. yeah. Just, you know, they're just kind of sleazy, like, and I just didn't like them, you know, and just didn't enjoy working with them. But I've always enjoyed working with James. He's always worked hard, and we went a lot of races together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
I agree. How do you work well with someone you can't trust?
Right, you know, and like I said, he's always looked out for me and tried to keep me off the really, really bad horses, but, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes you just can't do that. But mm-hmm. most part, he has. He's watched out for me pretty good.
And it sounds like you've looked out for him as well.
Yes. Like I said, I enjoy working with him. He's mm-hmm. he's been really good.
Can you talk about during his health?
Yeah, he was diagnosed with throat cancer last spring, and it got pretty bad. And he had to have a couple operations, whatnot, and he couldn't work and couldn't talk. He still can't talk. And I just told him, just do everything on the phone. Just text everybody that you need to text, and we'll go from there. Just stay at home. You can do it from there. And I told him the only ones I care about is Larry Smith and my wife, Tony. And other than that, I don't really care if I ride for him or not, you know. And he did a really good job this summer, considering he couldn't come out and hustle. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was like, you can't.
And he got you 65 wins?
Yeah.
Together?
At this year. Belterra, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was good enough for third in the standings. So mm-hmm. when you compete.
Don't fire him.
You're right. And when you're competing against a bunch of 20-year-olds, that's pretty good, you know? So, yeah.
Keeps them humble.
Like I said, you can't kick a guy when he's down.
No. Well, that's what sets you apart.
But, yeah.
Another thing I notice about you, just being in the jocks room with you, you're always quiet but willing to talk if I want to ask you about the track condition that week.
Or, right.
You seem confident, focused. Do you have or have you ever had a pre-race routine to get you in a mindset, especially given all of life's circumstances. You've done this long enough. You've had to certainly put on a performance when your mental state maybe wasn't where you wanted it to be.
Well, whenever I got on the horse, I was totally focused no matter what. I mean, it was just 100% tunnel vision. I mean, that's the way I've always been. Mm-hmm. So I never had any problem blocking it out. Mm-hmm. It's like the getting hurt. It's going to happen when you're a jockey. It's just right. a matter of time, you know. But if you sit around and thought about it, mm-hmm. a normal person couldn't do that job knowing that you could get killed every time you went to work, every single time. But you just have to block it out. I mean, just the fear, you just have to just go right over your head. You just can't think about it because, like I said, it would paralyze you. The fear would grip you so bad. If you really thought about getting killed every time you went to work. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so I was lucky right from the start that I could block that out. And I think that's one of the things that's helped me through all the years is being able to just block everything out, just totally focus on that horse.
Just look and, between the ears.
Yeah,
go.
And yeah, it's like I said, tunnel vision. As soon as I get in that gate, I mean, it's every time. It's just you look straight down the track, and you kind of envision where you want to be, mm-hmm. like here, there, you know. Mm-hmm. And and it's worked out well for me. I don't know how other people do it, mm-hmm. but yeah, it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
And you was, we were talking about the fear of, about getting killed. Mm-hmm. I was at Beulah Park one day, and we're riding, and me and this guy, we're coming down the stretch. We're heading head. I mean, it was like this, the eighth pole. His horse broke down, and he fell. And I looked back and I said, man, that's going to hurt because there was 12 horses in the race. Mm-hmm. So we're right there. Sure enough, horses, two or three of them run over him and killed him. Mm-hmm. And we had to ride the next day. And I never gave it a second thought, you know. Mm-hmm. But you just have to do that or you couldn't do this job.
Right.
I mean, you just have to block it out. And like I said, I've been lucky enough to be able to do that, so, yeah.
I believe a lot of athletes, they talk about a flow state, and it seems like you have that flow state where you just, once you've thrown a leg in the over the back.
Get in the zone, yeah.
You're one with the horse.
Yeah, and it's, like I said, it's been that way since the start, and I don't know how I got it that way, but, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen a lot of guys that I've rode with have gotten hurt and gotten scared. When they came back, they weren't the same. They didn't ride the same. And you could tell they were scared. But, yeah, I've been really, really blessed for as many times as I've been busted up and hurt. And I just can't wait to get back. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And would you agree that if you're intimidated or scared, that the horse is going to feel that?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They know it. And like I said, and all your jockey friends know it.
What other parts of your life outside the track have kept you balanced?
Well,
you take one day off a week,
right?
What do you do with it?
Usually hop on my motorcycle, go for a little ride.
Some more speed.
I think I'm addicted to speed because I got a really fast car, a really fast motorcycle, and I like fast horses. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Great trio.
Yeah.
You have worked incredibly hard in your career. Would you say you have enjoyed the journey the whole way?
Oh, yeah. Except for hitting the ground hard. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
In some ways, it's nice to look back and feel like you really earned it, though. You got to go through some injuries.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, being a jockey, that's part of it. But I think I've been hurt more so from riding cheaper horses than, say, like Pat Day, right. Chris McCarron. You know, I guarantee they hadn't had as many breakdowns as I have. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot better now since they've gotten better with the vets and not being able to give them any kind of medication they want to. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of rare nowadays that horses break down like they do, but... You know, it happens.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's still the risk.
I've seen that, and it was nasty. It was nasty.
Happens in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
People have asked me the same thing, though. Do you think you'll have any fear? To me, just, I don't know, when things happen or when your horse is doing something in the gate and you're falling under their legs, the thing just kind of feels like it goes into slow motion.
Yeah, it does. Even like going down in a spill, it kind of, as soon as you start going down, you just kind of close your eyes and it just takes a long time before you hit.
Yes.
And then you go,
try to keep rolling.
Right. And then you say, ooh, ooh, oh, man, that hurt.
Or the wind's knocked out and you just, right, it's going to come back.
And then you get wiggling everything, make sure everything's still working.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I do when I go down the spill. I get moving everything to see if everything's still working. So, yeah.
Yeah. But I feel the same. It's never affected my mind. I pole vaulted before, so I have some need for adrenaline as well. So I had more injuries pole vaulting and never had a setback. But I saw several really talented pole vaulters just have complete mental blocks.
Yeah.
Really took away from their career. So I don't know if we're missing something or we have something added, but I'm glad we share that. It does help with longevity. What advice would you give to someone just starting in their career, of any career?
I would say work hard. And if you're doing really good, work harder to keep doing good. And if you get down a little bit, work even harder. Just don't ever quit working, because you can be on top of the standings one day and you go a couple of weeks and don't win any races and you could be down low quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where a lot of guys don't think about that. They think about, oh, I'm all this, you know, I'm hot today, you know. They don't think about what's going to come if they don't do well, you know, because trainers are a fickle group. You know, if you're not winning, and you know, they go to the next guy who is.
Right.
So you just have to work harder, you know, just try to win more, work harder, and just, like I said, I'm 70 years old, and I still work as hard as I did when I started. So
it's a great example for us all.
Like I said, it's worked well for me. I don't know about for the rest of them, but it's worked good for me, because trainers, even if they don't ride you, they see you out there every day. Mm. And so they know. They know who's working, who's not. Because they're there every day at the rail. So they know. And I think I've made an impression on them a little bit. So,
I think everyone has high respect for you, Perry.
Yeah, I hope so. But, you know, I ain't going to lose no sleep over it if they don't, you know. That's the one thing I've done my whole career. I don't really care what people think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't, you know, go out of my way to try to make everybody like me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they do, they do. If they don't, they don't. I mean, I don't try to go around and just piss people off just for the fun of it or anything, but I don't really care what they think, you know.
That's a great approach.
Yeah, well, like I said.
You're a very classy person, very much a sportsman, but that you do it just for you, not because you're trying to impress or win people over.
You know, because like I said, I don't really care what they think. Like all the jocks in the jocks room, I mean, I don't care if they like me or if they don't, you know. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't bother me one way or the other. I ain't going to lose no sleep over it.
Hmm.
But, yeah, but like I said, I don't try to be mean to people or you know, not make them not like me or anything. But I don't, like I said, I don't put on airs to try to make them like me. More so, you know, like I said, if they like me, they do. If they don't, they don't. I don't care. It's not going to change my life one way or the other. So,
yeah.
Yeah. My wife, she always said, I wish I could do that. Because she always, you know, worries about what people think. And I just don't care. You know,
you just shrug it.
I care what she thinks. That's about it. You know,
why you're getting on eight horses for her. In the morning.
You know, like I said, I care about what she thinks, but anybody else, I don't. You know, they can like me if they do. That's fine. If they don't, I don't really. I mean, ain't gonna lose no sleep over it.
Those are admirable priorities.
But yeah, like I said, it's worked well for me for 50 years. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure I've made some enemies along the line, but I've probably made more friends than I have enemies. So.
I don't know of any of your enemies that exist.
Yeah.
So I say you've done well.
Well, when you're leading rider a lot.
People don't like you?
Well, it's not they don't like you. They're jealous, mm-hmm. you know, because they want to be there, mm-hmm. which, you know, I can understand that.
Right.
But, yeah, I've been leading rider 35 times right here at wow. River Downs, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine I've developed a little hate along the way,
mm-hmm.
or a little dislike anyway. But like I said, I didn't care then, neither. It didn't bother me at all.
Well, and I think having that mindset allows you to keep treating those people with dignity as well, because
right.
you're not going to be vengeful back to them or
right.
try to do something to them in a race, even though they're probably trying to box you in
oh, yeah.
races and mess up your race.
They've done that several times here, like two or three of them.
And you're not even claiming foul on them. It's amazing.
But I do remember.
Uh-huh.
I do remember.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because
It's not wise, is it?
I've had a couple of times, two or three times, that the Spanish riders would be speaking in Spanish. And mm-hmm. I picked up enough where I know.
Interesting.
About get the white boy coming through on the rail. Mm-hmm. I can understand that in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And there was a couple of times there was guys that were tag teaming.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. But like I said, it didn't bother me. I would just ease back a little bit, come around them, and kind of lean on them a little when I went by.
Mm-hmm. Just let them know
you're there. Yeah. And just dare them to say something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Say, I got through.
Yeah. Say. But yeah, but I just never let anything like that bother me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just, that's just the way I was.
Kept forging ahead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
But I, like I said, I would just mostly try to focus on my horse and not what they were doing or what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't spend extra seconds on thinking about it. You know, I just, like I said, I'll just ease back a little bit and go around them.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, give your horse a breather.
Yeah, exactly.
And have that kick.
And most of the time I beat them. They mm-hmm. tried to tag team me, but
yeah,
couldn't do
they
it.
They used up know? Their horse's energy.
Right. So,
and where does the nickname Iron Man come from?
I think it's from the longevity, mm-hmm. from, you know, riding for so long and still winning.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where it came from. But they did a documentary on me, I'm thinking 10 years ago, something like that, maybe 9. And that's what they named it, Iron Man, Perry Utes. Yeah. And those guys were really good at what they do,
mm-hmm.
Making videos and media stuff. And they went to Eclipse for that.
Really?
Yes, for that video, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that was their second video that they'd win for horse racing. I don't know if you ever seen the video first Saturday in May.
Yes.
They did that one. Okay. Yeah, the same guys, yeah. Hennigan brothers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they did my documentary.
Okay.
And, they went.
So everyone listening needs yeah. to watch this.
Oh, it's so good.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that one was one that I didn't mind watching too much because they made you look like a movie star.
Uh-huh.
And everybody around you the same way. It made everybody look good.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that was a good one. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I thought the nickname had to do with your motorcycle accident. Can you talk about that? Because it is an awesome story.
Yeah, but that wasn't where that came from. No. I think it was, like I said, mostly from riding for so long and, you know, winning steadily.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I had a motorcycle wreck, and I was going down 275 doing 70 miles an hour in the middle lane. A car ran into me, knocked me off my bike. I slid down the highway, rolled around, kind of like a spill in a race. You tuck and roll, just mm-hmm. grab yourself, you know, make yourself as little target as you can.
Right.
And I got really lucky that the guy right behind me seen it happen, the car right behind me. And he got right behind me and followed me mm-hmm. the whole way, kept all the cars off of me. And once I finally stopped rolling and sliding, I stood up and did the same thing. Like in a spill, you wiggle all your extremities, see if everything still worked. Then I had a scratch on me. And yeah, I looked over at my bike. It was over in the ditch. It flipped over, and it was a total goner, you know. And I said, well, I can get a new bike. I said, body parts like this, they're hard to come by.
Yeah.
So I did good on that one. So I called my agent and told him, come and get me. I told him I had the wreck, and He come and got me, took me home, got my truck, drove back to the track, rode 9 races that day, and won the first 2. So it was a pretty good day. Yeah. Didn't get killed. Had a couple of winners. So, and I tell everybody this story that the reason why I didn't get hurt or get killed is because God had me in the daily double. Because I did. I won the first 2.
Got the daily double.
Yeah. So, yeah, I got a lot of mileage out of that story.
Yeah, and I'd say it's a great example that you really don't bring outside life to your performance on the track.
Right.
You can clearly separate it.
You know, I didn't think nothing of it. All I could think about, how's I going to get home from where I'm standing on the side of the road?
Mm-hmm. Have horses to ride.
Yeah, I had 9 that day. Uh-huh. A couple of them looked pretty good. So.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Awesome. Like I said, I don't let stuff try to stop me too much from doing my job, you know. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of days that I felt like crap. I mean, just really bad. But I always made it to work, did my job, went home, and did pretty good at it. So,
yeah.
There's been very, very few times in my 50 years that I've rode that I ever got too sick that I couldn't ride.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe 2-3 times, maybe, in 50 years.
You maybe took 3 sick days?
Yeah.
Wow.
That. But usually if I was named on a horse, I was there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it was 50-1 the last race at Churchill, drove 100 miles to riding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I just always wanted people to be able to depend on me. So that's where that came from.
Yeah.
You know.
It's very important. Commitment
and
to them.
It didn't matter how cold it was, how rainy it was, or how bad the track was. I was always there. When they said to go to the paddock, I was dressed and ready to go. Where everybody else was back there, oh no, I don't want to ride. It's too cold. It's too wet. It's too sloppy. It's too this. It's too that. But you know, they used to always try to get me to go and sit it out with them. But I would never do that ever. And that was one of the things I had fallen out with the Jocks Guild. Mm-hmm. I was in the guild for 34 years.
Yeah.
And we had a falling out, and it was because of that, because I wouldn't stand with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, I said, look, you don't pay my bills.
Right.
I said, I'll decide if I'm going to ride or not. I don't need everybody else in the jock's room to make my decision for me.
Mm-hmm.
If I think the track's too bad, I'll go and tell Clerk Scales I'm off. I don't feel safe out there. I'm not going.
Yeah.
That's happened twice.
You don't need group mentality to make a decision.
And like I said, that's happened twice, that I didn't think the track was safe enough.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I canceled races the next second after I said it, because it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I can ride on anything. You know what I mean, it doesn't, it's not that I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It's just I don't let it bother me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like I said, I got that dead focus where nothing bothers me. When I'm in the gate, it's time to go, I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I just would never let bad tracks, cold weather, rain, I just never let it bother me. And that's been that way for 50 years. And everybody knows it. So nowadays, when they have trouble with the track or management or anything, they don't even ask me anymore because they know.
Perry's going to ride.
Yeah. Like I said, if they go to the paddock, I'm going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't even ask me anymore. So, which I'm glad because I don't get tired of telling them you're going no matter what.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so consistent. That's great. Well, Perry, this has been so insightful, so inspiring, and I hope a lot of people hearing your story, whatever career path they're choosing, can just learn from your work ethic, your commitment, consistency, loyalty to others.
Like I said, they don't, a lot of people that I know don't work like that, you know. Steady every single day, you know. Just like I said, you can set your clock by it. 7 o'clock, I'm at the track. I'm ready to go every morning, no matter what.
Don't make anyone wait on you.
And like I said, I've always been that way, and I've always wanted people to be able to count on me. And so I mean, it's been a good run. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Can tell everyone's enjoying cheering you on, and we can't wait to see you break those records.
Yeah, like I said, it's getting harder to get mounts. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I'm 70 years old. Who wants to ride a 70-year-old guy? But right.
You've beat me in some races this year.
Yeah. But like I said, I still do well and still ride. I don't ride as many as I used to because I used to ride a cart almost every day. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got 53,000 mounts. But
yeah,
it's gotten harder to get mounts, mm-hmm. you know. But I don't care.
But you're still getting them.
Yeah. But like I said, if they want to ride me, that's fine. If they don't, that's fine. You know, I ain't going to sit around and mope about it. You know, I just, every time somebody names me on one, I do the best I can. Every time.
And you won a stake race this year, too, right?
I did, for Larry Smith. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was pretty sweet. Yeah, a little two-year-old. His second start of his career, and he's won both of them. So, yeah.
Oh, great. What's his name?
Just Like Rambo. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's a great name.
So, yeah. So, yeah, that was pretty good. So, I was just the first jockey at 70 years old to ever win a stake, too. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, I'm just
breaking records.
Setting records every day.
Uh-huh.
Every day.
So, yeah. And I love the consistency. Again, it doesn't make you too high and mighty, and you just keep going.
Yeah. Like I said, I've been leading rider here 35 times. And, every time I was a leading rider, I just worked harder to try to stay there, mm-hmm. you know, because there's going to be somebody try to knock you off. You know?
Right.
But, yeah, you can't think that you're all that just because you win a few races, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like I said, I know some people do mm-hmm. think that they're all that, but they're only as good as the horse they're riding, you know. Put them on a donkey one time and see how good they are.
Right.
So, yeah.
I always say horses keep us humble. Every time I think I've figured out some new technique in my riding to relax every horse, make every horse get along with me, then I'm quickly reminded I will always be a student of this game.
Well, the only reason why we can ride horses to start with because we're smarter than they are. Because if horses were half as smart, they'd dump you in a heartbeat. I mean, they'd just run along there and stop real fast to tip you right over.
Well, that's what I see the mules do.
Yeah.
Where I'm from, Northern California, with the fairs, they would have mule racing, and they break out of the gate, and a lot of them U-turn.
Yeah, so like I said, we're pretty lucky that we can even ride them.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with just your toes in the stirrups.
Yeah.
And riding the short.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so hovering above their
as path. Long as they keep going straight, everything's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have any problem, but let one swerve with you just a little bit going that fast.
Yeah,
and I've had that happen before. One time I was like 6 in front coming down about the 16th pole, and the horse was flying. He's going to win easy. I'm hitting him just like I always do. Mm-hmm. This is back before they limited it.
Uh-huh.
And I was getting into him hot and heavy. Finally, he got tired of it, and he just swerved right out from under me.
Uh-huh.
Well, it wasn't enough to get me off. It's enough to lose my balance.
Okay.
So now I slid around to the front of him, and I'm holding on to his neck. And like I said, I'm about 8 in front,
mm-hmm.
and there's a whole field of them behind me. I said, this is not going to be good. And I kept slipping and slipping and slipping. Finally, I had to let go. I couldn't hang on to him. But I held onto the bridle, and the horse stepped right in my face, stepped right in his eye socket. And I just flipped him right over my head, pulled the bridle and everything off of him. Never let go, though. I kept the bridle in my hands, the stick, and
But you did stop before the wire?
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been nice. It happened just after.
Right, but no, it happened about the 16th pole. I couldn't stay on any longer, you know. He's going way too fast, and he's just bouncing me up and down. And
did you ride that horse back?
No, I was off for a pretty good while.
Okay. Well, I bet you taught him.
Yeah. I think the next guy who rode him, I told him, don't be hitting him left-handed that hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he'll take it for a while, but, you know, finally he said that was enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he let me know. He just swerved right from under me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Stewarts, I told them, I said, when I turn 70 years old, I think I should get the bug back, you know.
That's a neat idea.
I said, you're 70 years old. Give them guys some incentive to keep riding you, mm-hmm. you know. Okay, we'll get into it. We'll look into it, yeah. And they'll tease you, and they say, yeah, we talked to the commission, and they said that was fine. I keep waiting. So, well, I don't see my name. with the bug, you know, yeah. you promised.
Checking the program.
Yeah, every day. But yeah, I think that should be a thing, though. You know, yeah. You get to 70, uh-huh. You should get the bug back and right. Should keep it until you quit. But yeah.
So why not, when they turn 70, take 10, and then after a certain number of wins, you get 7 pounds off. Gives the horse less weight to carry.
Yeah.
You could make the weight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the reasons that I've lasted so long doing this, because I don't have to fight my weight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've weighed 110 pounds for over 50 years, every day.
Wow.
I mean, I might go up a pound or down a pound, but pretty much every single day. But I work at it, you know. I'm very dedicated. Well. I watch what I eat, and I eat the same amount of food every day, no matter what. Whether I'm riding, whether I'm rehabbing from getting hurt, I eat the same amount of food every day. I get on the scales first thing every morning, see what I weigh. If I'm light, I'll eat a little more. If I'm heavy, I'll eat a little less. And I kept it 110 pounds for 50 years every day. So I think that's what's kept me from being able to ride. You know, because a lot of jockeys have to fight it, and after about 20 years, their bodies just give up. Yeah. You know, it just, they said that's far enough. But like I said, I've been very blessed that I was able to dedicate my whole life to eating the same amount of food every day. And so I never pig out, like sit around and just eat and eat and just for the fun of it. I eat when I get hungry. I eat it pretty much the same times every day. And it's worked well for 50 years, so I'm not going to change.
If I had one word for you in your career, I would say it's consistency.
Yes, I would say so, yeah. Like I said, I've showed up to work same time every day. And like I said, I've kept my weight the same every day. And
ridden every horse. Yeah. Same, regardless of talent.
Yeah, whether
he, every person.
I would still ride him to win. You know, I can't think of any of them that I just give them a sanitary ride just to get them around. But yeah, I've went on a lot of horses that a lot of people wouldn't even sit on. And yeah, like I said, I've been blessed. There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
Well, great. Well, thanks for talking with us today. I'm inspired.
It was fun. Yeah. It wasn't too painful. Yeah.
Good.
And now for a moment from our next episode.
I'm Farron Peterson, here today with Pat Day.
So, man, I'm thinking, boy, to be leading rider in North America, get my name up in lights, I'll never have another bad day. I bought into that lie that, you know, when you reach a certain level of success in your chosen vocation, you've arrived.
Boundless is a podcast that explores the stories of individuals who have accomplished the seemingly impossible by breaking molds and redefining success through unique challenges, pivotal moments, and unbreakable determination. This episode of Boundless is brought to you by AmWager, where horse racing fans can be part of the action anytime, anywhere. Watch, wager, and enjoy races from tracks across the country on a fast, secure platform built for racing enthusiasts. Whether you're following your favorite horses or jockeys or discovering new tracks, AmWager makes it easy to stay connected to the sport you love. Getting started is simple. Sign up today at amwager.com and enjoy a 100% deposit match. Terms apply. See amwager.com for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, help is available. Please call 1-800-GAMBLER.